Welcome to Manager Tools. This week, behavior is what matters. This cast was originally recorded as a bonus episode to our Effective Relationships series, which was for sale. We have now folded that into our MT Disc product, and MT Disc is only $30, whereas I think Effective Relationships was $100. Prices continue to come down because we figured out how to make things cheaper. And behavior is what matters is a core part of what Manager Tools, Executive Tools, and Career Tools all do. And you've got to understand behavior if you're going to start getting smarter about your communication and also paying attention to other people. You're not going to be smart enough to be a psychologist or a psychiatrist and figure out what they do. You have to trust that their behavior is the most predictable thing about them. And it is. Even psychologists agree with that. Folks, if you're thinking about behavior, you got to be thinking about communication. The words you say, how you say them, facial expressions, body language, and of course, work product, the fifth and catch-all for the professional. And if you're thinking about communication, you got to come to the Effective Communicator Conference. It's my favorite conference to present. We hear all the time it's the candidate's favorite or attendee's favorite conference because it's so interactive. And you will find yourself feeling like you're going to have to do something you've never done before because all of us believe that the way we communicate is the right way. But I can assure you, yours is not the right way. It's just yours. And everybody communicates differently. And learning how to see and hear someone else communicating differently and then being able to moderate yourself so you can be effective with them and you can learn it all in a day, probably one of the coolest things that we do. So come to the website and sign up for an ECC. Here it is. Behavior is what matters.
Mark, you recall that one of the reasons we started Manager Tools and Career Tools was that we couldn't find any good guidance regarding what to do to be effective, right? The what to do. I mean, there's a lot of advice out there, right? But not much of it is worth a lot. You've had the same experience I have. We read these professional kind of self-help books, and I always walk away that I really didn't know what to do differently. I mean, it's, I should think this, I should be that, I should consider this, but I didn't really know what to do. And so that's one of the reasons we started doing podcasts, right? To give managers and professionals how to advise, what to do, what behaviors to exhibit.
Exactly. And this is so important as it relates to DISC, right? In this entire series, we're going to be talking about other people's behaviors, the things they do, and how you can behave to be effective with them. And long before DISC taught us about behaviors, we learned from enough reading and from watching great managers and leaders that what sets them apart is a lot of people want to guess at their mindset. A lot of people want to guess at where their heart is or the ideas they have. But the fact is, it boils down to behavior. Everything about organizations boils down to behavior. And when it comes to interacting with other people, understanding their behaviors and behaving in ways that make sense to them, making slight adjustments in your own style in order to be effective with different people, we are going to make recommendations about behavior. In fact, we could hypothetically say, we don't care how you feel or how you think, we just want you to behave this way. It's actually not that easy because we don't want you to try to fake it, but behavior is an underpinning of what Manager Tools and Career Tools is all about. And we'll explain why in this cast. And look, we've all heard them, all the different theories about being a better manager, how to motivate people. Look, folks, sorry, but you'll never, ever motivate another person. You won't. You can't. Okay? All motivation is self-motivation. You know, it's important to understand people's backgrounds. People say that. Well, folks, I'm sorry. That only works some of the time. It's largely irrelevant. It's not a good tool. There are great performers out there with very unusual backgrounds. And there are poor performers whose backgrounds look perfect on day one. You know, people say, oh, you need to learn how to lead other people. Well, frankly, a lot of that is wasted time. Nobody can even agree on what leadership is. People say, oh, you've got to set an example. You know, it's funny. When people say how to set an example, they give the most generic of things like come in early and stay late and be clear in your communications. But they don't define exactly what those examples are in detail enough that somebody who's just starting their career or even in the mid part of their career and want to make a jump to management or to executive life, they don't know specifically what example to set. What really matters organizationally and relationship-wise is behavior or what matters organizationally is performance. And the only thing that contributes to his performance is behavior.
Okay. Well, that's the hard part. When we say behavior, often folks really have a vague understanding of what we mean. And if it's such an important part of what we're going to talk about relative to DISC and how to be effective with it, we really need to help people understand what specifically behavior is.
Yeah. And that's the first of our three parts. We've got three parts of this cast. We're going to define in excruciating detail, folks, what is behavior? What do we mean when we say behavior? And it's a number of things. Okay. Then after we define that, we're going to help you see why other stuff you might think about, try to leverage, think about, focus on, and so on, don't produce results. It's only behavior that produces results. And lastly, we'll talk about why focusing on behavior is better than those other things. Look, we don't mean to be disrespectful to other thinkers and idea sharers regarding management. We don't. If you learn something, that's great. We simply believe all those other things are way less leverageable. They're the wrong things to focus on. And you can spend your entire life trying to set a great example. And if you choose the wrong examples, and there aren't that many books out there to tell you what examples to set, you're going to waste a lot of time. So that's why we focus on behavior.
Yeah, well, and by definition, an example is behavior. So you better understand what the behavior is involved in that example.
The moment you say you're going to set, somebody's going to set an example, they have to describe it behaviorally, right?
Exactly. But they often don't.
But then they don't.
That's the problem.
Yeah, they don't. Sorry.
So let's help people. What is behavior?
Yeah. Behavior is five things as we define it at Manager Tools and Career Tools. And they are the words you say, how you say those words, the tone and pace and speed and inflection, your facial expressions, whether you're smiling or frowning when you say something as a very generic example, and your body language. Are your arms crossed? Are you making small gestures or big gestures? Those kinds of things. Okay. And then lastly, your work product. And work product is a number of things rather than going through a litany right now. I'll wait and I'll define that in detail when we get there.
Good. Okay. So the first of the list is the words you say. I mean, words matter, right?
Yeah. Look, the example I always use, and I remember learning it from my boss at Procter & Gamble years ago, there's a difference that's audible that you can hear, and it's also measurable because you can hear it, between the salesman who asks, can I place that order? And the one who says, I hope you'll consider placing an order. Look, from a standpoint of attitude, both mean well, both have a great attitude, both would surely say they meant well, but meaning well in both cases and saying those two things, those two different things, are going to get you different results in the long run.
Yeah. One of them is more likely to actually get the order, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why one of the unofficial mottos of salespeople is ABC, always be closing. And I don't think there are many salespeople who are listening right now who would say, I hope you'll consider placing an order as a close. A close is a question. It requires the customer, the potential customer, to say yes or no. And the other thing about closing, it's often said, is close early, close often. Look, if you don't have to talk about your product, if they're ready to buy now, don't have them listen to your product, close. But you don't start the call by saying, I hope you'll consider placing an order and think you're done, because that's not a close. And they don't feel obligated to make a response. Look, the words you choose to say out loud to others are a choice. And different words produce different results. Folks, your choice of words makes a difference in your business results. And look, there's ample evidence. Certain words are known to produce, in certain situations, distinctly better results. Look, suppose a production floor worker had just had his machine shut down. It had a malfunction light lit up, and the machine stopped. And while he's diagnosing it, he sees a completely stripped part that he knows, based on his experience, 10 years experience on the floor with this machine, that part is stripped and it's going to require ordering and it's expensive enough that you guys don't keep one laying around. What if, when you walk up seeing the maintenance light and seeing work in progress backing up behind his machine or in front of his machine, when you asked him, hey, what's going on? What if he said, I'm working on it? Would you consider that an effective response, or would you not prefer, I'm working on it and I think I have a stripped widget and that means downtime because I don't think anything are in stock? The fact is, both of those statements are true. The words this person chose are different. Which words are better? Okay. If you assume he's communicating to help the organization, can he honestly say that the first one is, well, I'm working on it? Is that really, if he knows it to be true that he thinks he has a stripped widget and there's downtime guaranteed if he has a stripped widget, is it fair for him to say, well, what I said was true?
Yeah.
Right?
It's true, but it's not meaningful, right? It's like, it's the downtime that matters.
And I got to tell you, folks, a lot of people want to defend themselves with truth. Well, what I said was true. This is not the law, folks. Truth is not a defense for poorly or ineffective communication. The fact that you say something true, look, the most slippery of politicians never ever say something not true. They just say things that serve their purposes and not someone else's. And we all know those people, and they're often on TV, and you don't like it when they don't answer the questions, even though they can say, well, my answer is true. What don't you like about it? Well, how about the part where you didn't answer the question? Or you withheld information that's relevant and legitimate for me to know and that you're in possession of. Look, on a lighter note, suppose the love of your life said to you in passing, waiting in line in a theater and a concession line, hey, I'd kind of like to marry you. Do you want some popcorn? We suspect, I mean, this is just me. This is just Mike and I, right? But we suspect those are not the words you'd prefer to hear if someone was proposing to you. And what's more, you would argue that even if those words are true, there are more effective words than those. And the words that people choose affect the meaning of the statement significantly. And we'd agree with you. Even if the intent were the same, and we would argue that it's not, but we'd be prepared to lose the argument because we'd be getting inside somebody else's head who could say, oh no, my intent was totally to propose, right? The fact is, words matter if they're likely to influence outcomes. I'm a big fan of William F. Buckley, a brilliant writer. And people used to say about William F. Buckley, George Will once said that people lost arguments to Bill Buckley. They said they lost only because he was articulate, whereas they could just not quite give voice to their razor-like thoughts. And what Will said is, you cannot think what you cannot say. And too many people want to say things and then defend themselves by saying, well, what I said was true, or you know, I meant well. And the fact is, anytime, folks, you say you meant well, just ask yourself how it would sound if your CEO said to the marketplace in a conference call, look, guys, our latest product totally flopped, but we meant well, so we're going to book that well-meaningness as revenue, as profit. Right? You don't get that. Well-meaningness in the marketplace is worth zero. It's behavior being products and services, that matters to the marketplace. People won't pay you for your well-meaningness, but people ask you to do that all the time when it comes to management, when it comes to behavior.
The second point was how you say those words, right? The tone, the tenor, the speed, inflection with which you say those things. Those can change the meaning, sometimes intentionally, sometimes not, but they do.
And speaking of which, one of the things I should have said earlier is that one of the things that's true of using behavior as it relates to DISC is that a simple way to think about categorizing behaviors is the three Vs, verbal, vocal, and visual. And the words you say are the verbal, and how you say those words are the vocal. And then lastly, because it's your vocal cord choices, and then facial expressions and body language, and to a large degree, work product, are visual. What we mean here is the tone, the tenor, the speed, and the inflection with which you say things. Those things, those choices, can change your meaning, intentionally or not, enormously, okay? You know, our friend Michael Swinson uses the string of words, I didn't say you had an attitude problem, to illustrate this beautifully, in my opinion. What Michael says at conferences is a way to help people see the distinction when a lot of people are so tied to their own speech patterns. They understand that they're different, but they assume that everybody understands what every inflection that they use means. And what's more, they assume that when they're trying to hide their inflections, they're good at hiding them. And let me just clue you in on something, folks. You're not good at it. Almost no one is. But Michael used the example of the string of words, I didn't say you had an attitude problem, to illustrate this. And he said, if you say, I didn't say you had an attitude problem, Well, then what that means is someone else did say, you have an attitude problem, but I'm just not the one who said it out loud. If someone says, I didn't say you had an attitude problem.
Yeah, but you were thinking it.
Yeah, I implied it, or I certainly allowed your inference by what I said. And I think I can defend myself by saying I didn't actually say that, which is just a lame defense, but people do this all the time. If you say, I didn't say you had an attitude problem, well, what I mean is that surely you've got some other kind of problem. What happens is one person says something ill-advised about another person, and the word gets back to the other person, and the third party who's been talked about confronts the speaker and says, I heard you tell somebody I had an attitude problem. I said, oh, I didn't say you had an attitude problem, or I didn't say you had an attitude problem, or I didn't say you had an attitude problem. These are all defenses against somebody who know they're guilty, but want to be able to say something truthful and clearly are implying something different than just the phrase, I didn't say you had an attitude problem, with a very flat affect. If you tell me you know how to solve a problem, but you do it with a quiet and reserved tone, it's not impossible for me to infer that you lack confidence in your statement regarding your ability to solve a problem. I might choose to give the job to someone else who says the exact same words as you, but says, I know how to solve that problem. It's delivered more quickly, it's more loud, it's a little bit more brief, and the inflection on that problem indicates you've seen that problem before. Okay? I know how to solve that problem. That comes across differently as, I know how to solve that problem, right? The first one implies some doubt. The second one implies absolute certainty. Now, some of you may be saying, some person may just talk quietly in a reserved way. Yes, that's true, and it's important we understand those differences between people. And yet, we ought not to deny that there are plenty of people in the world who would choose the second speaker who says, I know how to solve that problem, that person is going to be picked, all other things being equal, more often than not, because of the way they deliver their words. In other words, the vocal pattern, how they say the words, matters to people.
Right. And by the way, and we'll talk about it more in the series, you can choose to say it a different way and get the better results.
Yeah.
Right.
That's exactly
the whole point.
I'll give you a perfect example. It's really more about the verbal piece, but half of the world, the D's and C's of the world, the people who tend to be task focused, if they're asked, how do you feel about the status of the project? Half of the world will say, I think it's going to work, or I think we're going to make the deadline. The other half of the world is going to say, I feel good about it, or we feel good about it. Those are two different things. If a high D says to you, what's the status of the project? And you say, I feel good about it, you may be attempting to suggest high confidence. To a high D, that bothers them. They wonder why you feel anything at all. You might say, I meant well, but it doesn't matter what you meant. All that matters is what the high D heard. And the high D heard some soft, squishy thing about emotional status, right? And by the same token, if you're the I or the S and you say, what's the status of the project? And they say, I think we're going to finish, but they don't tell you they feel good about it. You might doubt why they're being so analytical. Maybe what they're saying is they're 85% of the way there, when in fact you'd rather hear them say, I feel good about it, meaning that's a commitment that they're going to get it done. Neither one is right or wrong. They're just different. And that has to do with the words you say and how you say them.
Okay. So the next piece, which is so clear to me, it's important, but some people don't pay attention to it. Facial expressions.
Duh. I mean, and look, I'll tell you, this is one that really bothers me. I gave a talk recently to a client and I said, look, if I'm walking down the halls of this company and you know who I am, and I know you know who I am, and I look right at you and smile, and you look right at me and look away, that's rude. And you've just affected our relationship. And when somebody asks me what I think about you, I will discount some of my comments about you based on your ability to have relationships with other people, because you make a conscious choice not to smile when other people smile at you. Smiling, as an example of a facial expression, smiling when you agree to do something extra for a customer is perceived by customers as more professional and better for them than furrowing your brow when you say, I'll do it, and not smiling at all. You might think when you don't smile that you're conveying a sense of confidence, but customers would often say, you're not doing it with a good attitude. You might say you mean nothing by it. But again, we've alluded to this before. Communication is actually what the listener does, even though you are still responsible for your communication. Look, the statistic we've heard, and Michael at our conferences says this all the time, is that meaning is determined 7% based on the words you use, 38% by tonal differences, and 55% by the nonverbals, facial expressions and body language. I think facial expressions are huge. It's an easy thing to change for people. You don't snap your fingers and be done with the change overnight. Your face isn't rubber, but you can, if you're conscious of it, you can make changes in the way you interact with people based on your facial expression. When you hear an idea that it's clear to you somebody else is excited about, and you choose not to smile, you're allowing, whether you admit it or not, the inference that you are not excited about their idea. If you've only just heard it and you're not smiling, that is seen by others as you quickly disregarding somebody else's hard work. You may be right that it's not a good idea, but you're not building any relationships, and you probably could have built a relationship and delayed making a decision by joining in their joy that they feel like they have a good idea. Because trust me, sometime in the next month, you're going to have an idea you think is good, and it's not going to be good either.
Exactly.
Folks, if you want to dig in more to behavior, all you got to do is take an MT disc, ask you a series of questions for only $30 about your behavioral tendencies. And then it gives you a map to understand how you tend to behave and where you might have weaknesses or problems, and also where your strengths are. And the great thing about MT Disc is instead of costing $80, which is what our previous vendor would require us to charge you, we charge $30. And the reason why is we want more people to take advantage of Disc. So come to the website, sign up, pay for it, take the MT Disc, and then send your results to me, and I'll be happy to talk to you about it.
Okay, the next one, again, terribly important, body language.
Yeah. I'm amazed at the people who stand in front of me, cross their arms, and say, oh, I'm just cold.
Really? Yeah, really.
Yeah. Body language is everything your body does other than your lips and your face. It's how you hold your head. It's where you put your feet. It's how you bend at the waist. It's how your feet move on the floor when you're walking or when you're standing still, whether your legs are crossed, whether your arms are crossed, what your fingers are doing, how big your gestures are, which is an easy thing to change. And most people don't realize that gestures play a huge role in your ability to create a relationship with someone. And it's a small change. It's easy to change once you know it. And that's part of the thing we'll talk about over the course of the series.
Yeah. If I ask you a question, and you look down immediately, right? That is not perceived the same way when I ask you a question and you look directly into my eyes and give me an answer.
Yeah, exactly.
It's different.
Right? Yeah.
It's very different.
Yeah. There are people who sit in conference rooms and drum their fingers on the conference room table and then it means nothing. But most people would say, it means something to me. It means you're impatient. It means you're frustrated. It means that you feel like things are going slower than you want them to. And frankly, my mother would say, it's rude. You ought not to do things that are rude. Look, suppose a direct, when asked about their status on a project, said, pretty good, while smiling and nodding her head and looking right into your eyes. Okay? Another of your directs said, pretty good, after pausing, looking down, and then looking away. Can you honestly say that both answers mean the exact same thing to you? Now, some of you would say, well, I think you're putting too much emphasis on somebody being able to sell their answer. The fact is, folks, the vast majority of people don't try to sell their answer. They engage in normal patterns of behavior for them. Okay? And once you learn people's patterns, you can not only be aware of what their patterns are and what they mean, you can also modify your behavior in order to be more like them without mimicking them or mirroring them. And you can be aware when their patterns change. And again, we're not saying one of these directs is right or wrong, but there is general agreement about the differences, and paying attention to other people's behavioral patterns is an effective way to go through life, particularly if you have to count on them in order to produce the aggregate output that your team does in order to create behavior or results for the organization.
Let's talk about work product, which is the last of the things we're going to talk about when defining behavior. But this is one that people often forget, and it comes up all the time, right? For example, if somebody's working distant from you and you don't get the chance to see them all that often, work product becomes huge. So what's work product?
Yeah. What you do and how well you do your job are behaviors as well. Now, look, I'm going to take a minute here. I want to try to explain this because people sort of pause at this one, but I want to take a minute before that we get into all the details of all the different interactions between D's, I's, S's, and C's and so on. But look, conceptually, the idea of work product as behavior flows from the idea of your organization as an entity unto itself. And it is. I mean, your organization is considered an entity. And you and your fellow associates, the fellow professionals in the organization, are the hands and the arms and the eyes and the ears of the firm. In the same way that your hands and eyes engage in your own behavior for your person, yourself, you engage in your firm's behaviors. Look, for those of you listeners with some U.S. legal background, think of a firm as it relates to its legal status as a person. If you don't know this, folks, at least in the U.S. and often in many other countries in the world and legal systems, there are some equivalencies to this. Corporations act as an entity, and they're granted what is legally called personhood. They can act, they can be sued. In the modern world, particularly in the financial industries, it's considered a death sentence for a company to be indicted, the entire company to be indicted. People worry that executives get indicted, but in fact, that may very well be better for the organization in the long run than the entire company being indicted. Look, you cannot assert yourself. You cannot engage in behavior as a disconnected individual if you're acting professionally in your role or on behalf of your firm, okay? You can't say, you know, I'm just me when you're acting in your job. When you're acting in your job, you're a part of the company. You're producing output for the company, and that work product is the results or the behavior of your organization. Managers cannot be managers, cannot use role power, which is a part of being a manager, without the firm's existence to make the role, that role power associated with your role possible. So think of it this way. Your job responsibilities are a good starting point to think about what your behaviors ought to be at work. Job responsibilities, job descriptions, in fact, serve as a form of an avatar for what amounts to the behaviors associated with your work product. And that was probably a little too theoretical for most people. But that's how we come across defining your work product as a form of behavior, because it's your work product that is aggregated to create the behavior, which is results of the organization. In the same way that you swing a bat in baseball, and that is a behavior, swinging a bat, and the result you get is a home run or a single or a double or a strikeout or, you know, whatever it might be, you engage in behavior and that produces results. The company engages in behaviors, which are your work products, and that produces results in the marketplace, buying and selling and profit and so on.
Are there some general rules for how to define specifically what work product is?
Is that you want me to get specific? Yes. Yeah, I suppose I could. Yeah, there are several general rules. The first one is, if you want to get more specific, the first one is quality. Okay. The quality of your work is a behavior. Okay. It's part of your work product. And that quality of your work, how does your work compare to accepted or agreed upon internally or externally in your company standards of efficiency and excellence? Okay. How high quality is your work? You might disagree with your boss about something, but your boss is not wrong to call the quality of your work a behavior. And so therefore, to use an example of manager tools, your work product's quality, the quality of your work, is justifiable fodder for discussion in the feedback model. Another one, obviously, if you talk quality, you might as well talk quantity as well. How much work have you done? This is certainly true in many jobs where there are numerical goals, but there are many jobs that are not formally measures where quantity could be assessed. And so just because you're not in sales where it says you have to produce this many sales doesn't mean there aren't reasonable measures of the amount of work that you do. It could be paperwork passed through your desk. It could be throughput on the production line. It could be number of blueprints reviewed or patents filed or anything like that. Next is accuracy. Does your work require rework or does it meet generally accepted practices in your profession? Another one is timeliness. Do you meet deadlines? Are you on time to things yourself? Speed often creates inefficiencies, but it can also be an enormous competitive advantage. Frequency of your work product is also part of your timeliness. And as I'll say again, your own timeliness, whether or not you're on being where you're supposed to be, in other words, when you're supposed to be there, is included in timeliness as well. You know, isn't it funny how people who are always late to meetings don't miss more airline flights than the rest of us?
Yeah, how does that happen? I don't understand that.
Yeah, they know that the plane will leave, and so they make it before the plane takes off, which is a good reason why we ought to just start meetings on time and leave people out in the hallway. You don't have to lock the door, but start the meeting. People will start showing up on time, just like when the plane leaves, everybody's on it. Documents are another form of work product. You're responsible for the communication that you present to others in written and electronic form. And you're also, by the way, responsible for the analysis you do to lead to that communication and the ideas that you have, which are part of your communication. If you communicate an idea, that idea becomes behavior in the form of its communication. Emails are behavior. You made choices about what you said and how you said it. This is very much akin to the words you say and how you say them that we mentioned earlier. So that's a loophole that's closed for people when they said, hey, they're not talking about email. I can get away with anything I want on email because it's not behavior. No, it's behavior. And then the last one, which surprises a lot of people, relationships. Your relationships, folks, are an aggregated form of behavior. And by the way, that's, think about it. What are relationships if not the words you say, how you say them, the frequency of how you say them, the quality of how you say them? Sorry, but that's what relationships are made on. Your organization relies on you to maintain professionally viable relationships. I talked to a manager today. I'm with a client today. We're recording this late at night. And I was with a client and somebody was telling me this story about two of their directs who weren't working well together. And he said, is it reasonable for me to expect people to get along? Like, yeah, that's part of their job. Well, it's not in their job description. I'm afraid the union will get after me. Oh, no. The union won't get after you at all. If you tell one of your directs, I believe as an adult, you have an obligation to have a good, professional, polite, respectful relationship with that person. And so if I may give you some feedback, and the person says yes, when you tell me you won't be in the same room with them, that means you're not doing your job. What can you do differently? And when the person says, well, I don't care, I'll never be in the same room with them, I'm thinking, okay. One of you guys got to go. And I don't feel an obligation to try to adjudicate or try to coach you psychologically. I'm going to start with the behavior of, I expect you to be in the same room with them tomorrow at our staff meeting. And if you're not at staff meeting, you'll be the one at fault. And by the way, if you're at the staff meeting and they come in after you're there, proving that they will come into a room that you're in, but you won't come into a room that they're in, you're the one at fault, right? So relationships matter. If you don't have a good relationship, that affects other part of your work and the efficiency of the firm, and it affects the output of the firm as well. So therefore, relationships are a form of behavior. And that's it. That's all five. You know, as I think about it, I guess there are six subparts to work product. So I guess you could say there are 4 + 6. There are a total of 10 behaviors, although some of them blur together a little bit. But that's how we define it. And folks, all value creation flows from, or at worst, it flows through, the behaviors you engage in. In those cases where value flows through your behaviors, in other words, the idea is necessary, but it has to flow through behaviors to come to the marketplace, we still recommend to managers focusing on behaviors because they're measurable and inarguable, which we'll talk about later.
You've always been a strong proponent of the idea that behavior is what produces results. And by definition, the other stuff doesn't produce results. Explain that to me. Why do you think that?
I don't know that we've ever said it like that, but you're right. It's true that behavior produces results, and never said before, but it's also true that other stuff does not produce results. The use of behaviors as the fundamental measure and lever of virtually all things managerial, and really professional, frankly, surprises a lot of folks. Look, again, harkening back to the beginning of the show, how many of us have been told we need to motivate other people? It's really stunning in a way when you understand behavioral psychology that it's even tolerated that someone would say it's important to motivate other people. The jury is in. All the psychologists and behavioral scientists agree you cannot motivate someone else. You can't. Motivation is always internally generated by the individual you're talking about. The manager who struggles to motivate his team will probably only be successful creating an environment for those directs And by the way, all we're doing is creating environment. We're not motivating. You're creating an environment which might cause motivation among those directs who are largely motivated in precisely the same way that the boss is motivated. And by the way, those of you who say, well, that would be dumb. Look, keep in mind, a lot of bosses do that because why wouldn't they want an environment that causes people to do good who are like them? Because they're a manager after all. Why wouldn't they want to create more managers just like them? And let's talk about something else. Motivation is something that comes up. Another thing that people always assail me on is the issue of ideas. Well, Mark, you know, it's not just behavior because somebody's got to have the idea for the BlackBerry or the iPhone or the Swiffer or, you know, some of GE's gas turbines, which are just things of beauty. Look, folks, we don't argue that ideas are hugely important. We think profit and profit is a great idea as well, okay? But you can't just whip up a batch of profit any more than an idea in someone's head has any value if it's in their head. We know ideas are important. They're the spark of so many things. Really, you could make a case that profits are an idea. That's good. How many companies have created products from, quote, insanely great ideas, unquote, only to have them flop? Right? Look, we use Steve Jobs' words, right? Insanely great ideas. But at Apple, they had the Newton. They had the Mac Cube, which didn't work. Steve Jobs' other company, they had Next. You know, the most recent example is probably Mobile Me, a great idea, maybe before its time, which was a total flop. It was hailed as a genius when it first came out, and then people started using it and said, oh, this is awful. Look, think of a different idea, folks. Freedom or liberty. You know, look, freedom and liberty, those are great ideas. But what's the value to the world? What's the value of the idea of freedom in the mind of a slave or in a subjugated citizen in a repressive dictatorship? I mean, having the idea of freedom is good, but if the slave lives her or his entire life and has an idea of freedom in his head and in his heart, but never is able to be free, how has the world benefited? Maybe it assuages, maybe it helps him get through his days. And look, I want people to want freedom in the repressive dictatorships of the world with the brutal dictators we have in various places in the world right now. I want people to think about freedom, but if they don't take any action, that idea, you could make a case, is dead. Look, there's an idea of freedom in France and Sao Paulo and Austin too, but the idea of freedom that is in France and Austin, Texas, serves the world and frankly its owner, the person who has the idea, because there are behaviors that bring that idea to life. Yes, of course we want the slave to dream of freedom, but if he's never free, if no one, he himself, somebody else ever frees him, the idea of freedom just stays an idea and it's not an energy that can serve other people. Ideas are great, and they become greater, and work ideas are great, and they become greater and more valuable when they are turned into actions by our behaviors. Our ideas are not valuable in somebody's head. Yeah, I know you say, yeah, you know that, but the moment you start talking about creating a prototype that came from an idea, you're no longer talking about the idea anymore. Now you're talking about a prototype which someone built with their behaviors. And I don't want to make this too high level, but no idea, folks, no idea left unspoken, unacted upon, unbrought to fruition, untested, ever delivered any value to anyone. It is the actions we take to turn those ideas into communicated concepts or products or services. And by the way, I'm being a little bit corporate there, right? Those are the ways that we deliver value. It is our behaviors that are the conductor of the value. I'm not saying that we won't get more profits or more results or better results with better ideas. We will. But the idea without the behavior is dead. And the beauty of this for managers and professionals everywhere is that if you had to manage and measure ideas, you would fail miserably. People have been trying it for years. Behaviors are much more easily measured and managed than ideas or emotional states or beliefs or feelings or cultures or spiritualities or intent or meaning or anything else that's in someone's head. We know ideas at work matter. We know they matter a lot. And so does love too, but we can't manage love as far as we can tell. We don't manage based on what is true so much as we manage based on what will help us align activity to achieve results. And by the way, that doesn't make management a bad thing or a weak thing compared to love and freedom. Look, love and freedom are really, really, really important. And I would argue that day-to-day management looks kind of boring and is not as sexy or as cool as love or freedom. But on a day-to-day scale, the idea of management, the ability to specialize labor in such a way in organizations that you can produce so much value that you create profit and you can reinvest that and create more great value. I mean, the democratic capitalism has saved millions of lives and built the standard of living that, you know, there are people in parts of the world today that are considered poor that live better than the kings of 150 years ago. They take for granted TV and running water and heat and cooling and the internet. And look, we can even make more simpler than that. You can't get inside your people's heads as a manager. You can't get inside your professional relationships, the people's heads. And by the way, people don't like it even if you could, so we don't recommend you do. So we have to manage those things which are visible. We have to measure those things that are visible in order to determine how well we're doing against our goals and objectives. And frankly, we can think of behaviors really as proxies for ideas, because the idea that's unshared is worth nothing to anyone other than the person who owns it, and it's not worth very much unless it's acted upon. Ideas don't produce results. Managers are responsible for results. Managers must manage, therefore, what they can that produces results, which is behaviors. Now, look, I know it would be easy. I could probably mess people up if I say this, but there is a way to make ideas manageable, almost. You just measure them. Pay someone to sit around and come up with ideas and pay him or her for the ideas. Okay, but look, and of course, you might say, that sounds good. Okay, that's a way to measure them, right? If you give me 5 ideas today, I give you $5 or whatever. The problem, of course, is the trick in that is that they have to say the idea out loud. And the moment the idea is said, that's a behavior. They communicated it. And I'm joking anyway. Look, imagine this experiment. Imagine everyone in your firm stopped engaging in any behaviors at all right now. They didn't work. No customer calls, no production workers on the floor, no turning off or on of machines, no quality checks, no trucks driven, no store doors opened in the morning, no code written, no code checked, right? No code compiled, no databases accessed in any way. How long before results in your firm suffered?
Immediately, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, let's make it even harder. Now add to that, imagine everybody feeling really motivated while they're doing absolutely nothing. And maybe even feeling motivated and thinking up tons of awesome ideas while doing absolutely nothing. That's a thought experience that'll make you realize, I don't know that I want to manage ideas or motivation. What I want to do is manage behavior.
That makes sense to me. So let's go a step further. Why is focusing on behavior better?
Well, okay, we've already hopefully tried to make clear that behavior is the purview of the effective manager and really the effective professional as well. It's not just because behaviors are the driver of all results. It's not just that results in your firm are nothing more than aggregated behaviors. It's because it's easier. I mean, we've hinted at that, but really it boils down to it's easier.
I find it easier to try to guess at people's motivation. I like trying to get into their head because I've found that over the years, particularly with my wife, for example, I am just really good at guessing her intent. That's worked out well.
Well, I think a lot of managers would say, I'd rather not focus on behavior because behavior is kind of messy. I'm just going to tell you what I think you're thinking. And then that's what we're going to agree that you're thinking.
Yeah.
And so
right.
Therefore,
yeah, that works.
That doesn't work well either.
And I find that people really like it when I do that.
Yeah. Look, we know when we talked about ideas and motivation, some of you rebelled a little. Many of you would say you'd rather run a company full of great ideas than one where everybody behaves. But the fact is, you really don't mean that. What if one of your directs thought to himself, wow, I just had the best idea of my life. I deserve a promotion, right? I think you should promote me just based on this idea. The idea is still in his head. He hasn't shared it with you. What are you going to say? You're going to say, no, I'm not going to promote you. Again, first they'd have to tell you it's a good idea, tell you that they have a good idea, and then there's the behavior. We might say, okay, what's to stop everyone from just coming up with tons of ideas? Does every idea that they have deserve a raise or a bonus? Probably not. You'd probably have to determine the value of the idea, right? Which would mean frustratingly some sort of behaviors to make that idea into a rally so it could be measured against, say, profit and loss, unless you think people will pay you for an idea. In fact, you could argue, well, Mark, I'm paying you for your ideas. No, you're not. Not at all. In fact, if you have an individual license, you're paying for documents, which is a form of work product, and you also believe that that will make you more effective and that that's a good economic choice. But look, what if they had a really good idea, but one of your directs, she couldn't turn it into reality? What if they couldn't make the prototype work? Is it still a good idea? The fact is, maybe nobody liked this person, so she couldn't get anybody to help her. Manufacturing wouldn't build it. Ops wouldn't ship it. Suddenly you're thinking, yeah, it's a great idea. Maybe she thinks she deserves a raise, bonus, promotion, whatever. But the idea doesn't get implemented, in part because she has bad relationships, she's poor at communicating it, and she can't design it very well. On the other hand, what if one of your other directs had a really good year? He came in every day, delivered on all of his objectives, had good relationships, met all of his objectives in every way. No great ideas necessarily, other than the ideas that he put to work every single day. Small things, but important nonetheless. All he did was produce results. You'd probably think, yeah, I could probably promote a guy who did that. Think for a minute about a guy who's highly motivated. If motivating our directs is what's important, why not reward a motivated direct? Or why not reward a manager who has a lot of motivated directs? And the answer to that one is easy. How do you know they're motivated? Surely you'd scoff at the idea that a totally motivated team that does nothing, right?
Right, exactly.
But the fact that we would scoff at it proves that we've equated motivation and behavior when in fact they're two different things. In other words, when you see people doing certain things, you say, aha, that's a motivated team. And what we're suggesting to you is even whether they're motivated or not, it's not really important. What you want is the behavior that you perceive a motivated team to do. And there are teams who are unmotivated who produce that behavior. How many times have you said to yourself, I want to get this done, but I don't know what to do? You feel motivated and nothing's happening. Is that a great feeling? Not really. Look, folks, to manage by any measure other than that which we can externalize in the form of a behavior or a measurement is, I hate to say this, but that is the same thing as abdicating our responsibilities to what is in the head of somebody else, which is a form of organizational anarchy, frankly. Managing by behavior is better because it is externally measurable and it eliminates the vast majority of perspective and self-interest that inherently create difficulties when you have a lot of people working in close proximity to one another. It's usually fruitless to predict results from ideas or motivation, but it is absolutely reasonable to predict results from a certain set of behaviors. Behaviors occur closer to results, to business results, than ideas and motivation do, and therefore they're more likely to be an accurate predictor. Look, if we were to mistakenly want to incentivize motivations or ideas or thoughts to drive results, we'd have to be able, since we can't see them, to infer those motivations or those thoughts or those ideas from somebody else's observable behavior or results. But the fact is, as I've alluded to, the average manager, the average anybody, is so incredibly inept at the process of inferring motivations from behaviors, while all believing that we are geniuses at it, is that trying to do that is a roadmap to misery. Whenever you think you can infer somebody else's motivations for doing something, you have to assume you're going to be wrong 75% of the time, because most of us would say, what would I have to be feeling, thinking in my head in order to engage in the behaviors they would engage in? But only 25% of the world, if you believe in the DISC model, which we do, only 25% of the world has the same motivations as you do when they engage in the behaviors you do. Some people have the exact opposite motivations that you do when they engage in the behaviors that you do. But the results are the same and the behaviors are the same, so you have to wonder, what do we want to measure? Do we want to measure thoughts and ideas? Or do we want to measure motivations or emotional states? No, we want to measure behavior. Behavior is our best lever. It's our best tool. It's our best measure. It's believable. It's mostly inarguable, although there are people who will argue about anything. And it's predictive. It's very predictive compared to other things that you can use to measure, manage, and essentially align people in an organization. Everything else other than behavior is really a guess at something. As you can probably tell, Mike, I could go on and on and on.
It's important. Hey, look, it's important. Folks need to understand this is, for me, when, you know, those of you know the history of manager tools, Mark consulted to my organization, you know, about 15 years ago now. And this was the light that went off in my head. This was the difference. Instead of thinking about what people are trying to get into people's head about what they were thinking about, what their motivations were. Just focus on what they do. That's it, right?
Yep. Yeah, don't try to guess. You might think Mike and I are pretty smart and we've stopped guessing. We catch ourselves having a discussion about guessing about people and we say to ourselves, ooh, bad idea. Don't bother. Focus on behavior. Manager Tools and Career Tools and this series of casts overwhelmingly focus on behaviors. It's easier, it's measurable, it's nearly impossible to argue with, and it matters because it produces results. We want you and your team to feel good. Don't get us wrong. We want you to be emotionally mature. We want you to be happy. We want you to be motivated. We want you to be inspired. But we don't think any of us is any good at either guessing at or measuring or getting at those things that make a difference. Behavior matters. It's the only way to really pay attention to getting the results you want. It's the best tool you have in terms of thinking about the output that you want from the people around you.
Awesome. Thanks, my friend.
My pleasure, partner.
All right, we'll see you later.
That's it, folks. A special edition of Manager Tools, actually, since I'm on vacation this month. And hope you enjoyed learning more about behavior. When I think about management, I'm always thinking about behavior. See you next week.